Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Hey everyone, there's a little box here just in case I need to see down on top of the front row. Okay, cool. So yeah, my name is Connor. That's not my slide. Perfect. Okay. So yeah, I'm Connor. I'm from Nethermind, and today I'm going to talk about a revenue model for base rollups. Now, I wrote this title before I really sort of had an idea of what I was going to talk about, and then I realized that revenue probably just refers to income, but base rollups are not just about, or when you're thinking about rollups in general, it's not just about income, it's about income and expenditure, and comparing those two is how you decide if you want to be a part of the base rollup. And I guess not only are we going to talk about like the base rollup as a sort of an entity, but also the entities, like the real life people that are participating in base rollups. So a quick primer on base rollups for anybody who isn't aware but they're lost. A rollup is said to be based or L1 sequenced when its sequencing is driven by the base L1. So basically, the L1 proposers are in charge of producing of proposing the blocks for this rollup, and the rollup derives its state from the sequence of transactions that appear on the L1. Now, a lot of rollups might actually you could squint and say that most rollups are like that already, but I guess the key thing is that the L1 proposers aren't supposed to be sequencing the chain. So the goal of today's talk is introduce the players in base rollups. So we're going to look at each of the players and like think about the income and expenditure that they have, and should they be playing this game. Identify their income and expenditures. Discuss how likely they are, how these income and expenditures are going to change on the roadmap that's like upcoming, the big change that we're expected to see, and then motivate you all to, I guess, participate in base rollups and be thinking about these income and expenditure problems that exist. And then, yeah, I mentioned fat stacks for all, but really what that means is everybody has positive P&L when they're playing these games. Okay, so who do we have here? So we have the users. They're the most important, right? We're always trying to sort of make, although I was on a panel yesterday where we were talking about who should be gaining the revenue in a system, and users were the bottom of the list. But users should be the ones that are gaining something from playing the game, so they're going to be the ones that I'm going to be like driving the revenue for a base rollup. Proposers and sequencers, I'm putting them in the same bracket. ZK provers, so we have this proposer over here and this based blockchain that's accepting the blocks. We have ZK provers, because I guess a stage 2 rollup should have ZK proofs. The DAO, so I guess when maybe some of you are here and you're thinking about the revenue model for base rollup and you're thinking that it's the DAO that we're trying to like create revenue for, but I think there's just too many players in the ecosystem to like fully focus on just the DAO or like whatever this, the treasury that exists on a DAO, on a base rollup. We're going to be thinking about them along with everybody else. And then also we're going to have to think about these other chains and rollups, because they are actually a big driver of the revenue, the income and expenditure for a rollup. So I have the shark from Finding Nemo. So depending on how you look at it, it could be a friend or it could be a foe, and there will be cases where they are both. Okay, so setting the table. So I guess maybe one of the reasons why I got accepted today was because when I submitted this talk, we were around June or July, and we were in a situation where Tycho was losing money by posting blocks to L1, which people were focusing on, and people were getting really scared, like base rollups might not have a future, what's happening here. But there was a good reason for this. Tycho wanted to make sure that users were getting a reasonable UX, that they were getting updates every 12 seconds, because base rollups can only confirm blocks when they get posted to the L1. Now again, there's this concept of pre-confirmations, but they aren't live yet. But At the time, Tyco was forcing L1 blocks onto the L2 blocks onto the L1, while they were only half full less. So they weren't actually generating enough fees to sort of compensate for the cost of posting to L1. But again, this was sort of the P&L that grow the pie was generating, right? And the P&L that they were looking at was L2 gas fees collected minus the L1 fees that were paid to post data and proofs to the L1. So that's a relatively simplified model of the revenue, the income minus expenditure for a base rollup. There's actually a lot more components that we need to consider when we're thinking about is this base rollup viable to run. So if you want to get a bit deeper, Nethermind research did get a little bit deeper at one point, and I guess we're getting deeper by the day. We had this sort of maybe a little more complex model where we were looking beyond the on-chain costs and looking at the sort of the running costs of running a prover, for example. Like running a prover is not cheap. Not only do you have to actually pay the electricity costs for running the prover, you actually have to buy the prover in the first place. So most people today aren't actually buying provers. They're outsourcing to like AWS or any of these internet cloud providers. So there's additional costs that need to be considered there. But there's also additional incomes, so I'm going to get to those in a second. So again, like I guess we're in a situation where maybe, okay, someone says your income minus expenditure is bad, someone else says it's not actually that bad, and really everyone is looking at this in sort of a quite imprecise model, and we're not actually able to consider all of the incomes and all of the expenditures, and I guess you could say that we're shooting from the hip a little bit. But these metrics do provide us with some indication of how things are changing, right? If they're getting bad, if they're getting really bad, or if this really is something unsustainable. And in that sort of early stages for Tyco, that was an unsustainable model, but it is getting better, and that's the key. So again, setting the table. This is the fourth slide that's setting the table. I was struggling for titles. So thanks to roll-up competition, base users can migrate easily between rollups that have similar network effects. So network effects are a key part of why users will stay on a rollup today or base rollup today. But base rollups, sort of by the warm fuzzy feeling that base rollups give us, is that they're actually very connected with L1 and other base rollups. So this network effect is actually potentially strongest or like shared between all base rollups, so the individual rollups don't actually have much network effect. So users on base rollups actually have basically not much switching costs between base rollups. So in this setting, the provider profits, so the providers I mentioned were those the provers, the sequencers, and the DAO. In this setting, the hypothesis that I'm claiming is that these profits of all these people must tend to zero, because it's easy for another base rollup to come along, replicate all of the functionality that exists in that base rollup, and basically just remove some of those overheads that base rollup was trying to generate. But this zero profit paradigm is far away. There's still a lot, because of all this haziness, because of this wild west that we're in, it's still possible that provers and sequencers can actually be making money. But again, this is going to be a sort of a long road, and we're going to get there incrementally. And again, depending on how you look at the road, like income is tending towards expenditure. You can see that as a bad thing, but you can also see it as a good thing, right? Especially in the case of Tyco, when they initially launched, where the expenditure was really greater than income, getting it close to income and maybe even getting it past income is definitely a good thing. So how you look at these things is very important. Okay, so on this path to the end game, this zero profit end game, there is going to be increases in income and there's going to be decreases in expenditure. The format is supposed to be decreases in expenditure. A little bit on a theme with Kevin's talk earlier on, but not like a HD video. So with music. So anyway, as we shed some of the technical debt or shed some of the sort of inefficiencies of early stage based rollups, we're going to decrease the expenditure, and we're also going to come up with new ways to increase the income. And yeah, basically that's the summary of the sentence at the bottom. Okay, so here's the list, right? So there's no real model as such, right? It's just a list. You have to basically sum up all of these peak components that you have in your base rollup and check, is the left-hand side greater than the right-hand side? And again, there's multiple players in the system. So when we're thinking about base rollup revenue, we have to look at it player by player. So the users have this warm, fuzzy UX or utility that's hard to quantify, but they pay like very quantifiable fees. But we just need to make sure that there is still some utility that these users are getting. And if they stop paying fees, then we probably have to question, are we charging too much, or are we actually generating any benefit to the users? Proposers. The proposers have relatively straightforward costs as well. They collect fees. They generate MEV, or they execute MEV. They also potentially collect issuance. Issuance is a contentious debate, like in terms of who's paying and who's receiving. But L2s can, or base rollups can create a token and issue it to the proposers. And the costs are L1 posting and running costs. Provers, again, they can collect fees as well, issuance as well. But they have another cost, which is the setup, which is quite a little bit more significant than a proposer, because again, ZK provers are pretty significant pieces of machinery. The DAO sort of actually does have a sort of a unique income source, which is investors. So when base rollup launches, you'll see that there might be a seed round or multiple seed rounds, and that revenue, that investment, does pay for a lot of the upfront costs, which. Again, you see the approvers and potentially the proposers. When you don't know what the fees are going to be, you do need some money in the bank to sort of get things rolling. And that's what sort of Tycho were doing at the start, right? And that makes sense. You need to get the users, create the utility, make sure that the UX isn't too bad, and then you start to generate the fees. And potentially the DAO can recuperate those losses for the investors. But the DAO also has significant... I also mentioned proposal fee. Proposal fee is sort of more of a complex topic, but it is possible that the DAO can be collecting money from actually charging proposers on L1 for the right to be a proposer, but that's not going to be a focus today. They also have to pay, so the DAO is important though, because the DAO does have to pay for things like R&D. We can't keep depending on Ethereum Foundation for funding. We have to sort of go beyond that, especially when we're trying to create base rollups sort of parallel to the Ethereum ecosystem. So some R&D money does need to be generated, and that comes out of the DAO. And there's also governance, running costs of the DAO. And then we have these alt chains and rollups. So what do they actually mean? So when these alt rollups compose with the base rollup, that could be seen as income, right? You're creating UX, you're creating improved utility for users. And that can allow you to charge more fees. But similarly, they also create competition, and with competition comes sort of tighter profit margins. So is income greater than expenditure? I've already sort of touched on why it should be, but in general, if it's not, you can pack your suitcase and you can go to some other ecosystem, some other roll-up. The proposers is an expectancy, yes, it should be, right? But we can see that there is new technology coming along, and there's probably going to be more where proposers may not actually be profitable in the short term because they may commit to offering pre-confirmations, for example. And if you offer a pre-confirmation too cheaply, it may be significantly more expensive to renege on that pre-confirmation than just posting it at a small loss on the L1. The prover in expectancy and long term, yes. But again, it may be a substantial cost to pay for proving hardware. So the prover must invest and see that there is a substantial chance of return. And the DAO... Again, I mentioned this investment model. Long-term is not sustainable, so they need to be investing in, I guess, sustainable infrastructure for these fee mechanisms, these proposer fees, these sequencer fees, and we're yet to see what that's going to look like, but it's definitely going to be very interesting if the DAO can actually recuperate those costs. So the costs right now are relatively straightforward, but our hope, considering the tight profit margins from Tycho, is that these will change, right? So I quote this sort of ancient philosopher or alter ego philosopher who says, base income and expenditure is always in flux. You can't step into the same base revenue model twice. What that means is that depending on the day, like as obviously today, when I go to the toilet, I hear people talking about what the markets are doing. Like, revenue is changing all the time, right? The fees are changing all the time, but also the technology changing all the time. So when we think about the base revenue model, we need to have a dynamics way, a framework for thinking about these things. And that's sort of going to be the focus next. So here are some of the big changes to base revenue that I expect to see in the future, in the near future. We're going to see cheaper L1 costs. We're going to see Proven becoming more efficient. We're going to see Prover and Builder markets maturing. So a lot of L2s, base ropes, will have run their own Prover, but we are there's whispers about Prover markets and potentially also Builder markets, right? So Builders and L1 are generating revenue for the proposers, and that's probably going to happen as well on base rollups as well. So that's going to be an income source for proposers. And shared everything, okay? So I mentioned this composition, but it's definitely going to be a significant area for income and reduced expenditure. So with shared resources or shared block space, shared proving, we're going to get bigger network effects. We're going to get better utilization of the resources that we're using. But we may also have higher costs, right? So how are we going to balance these things is going to be very interesting. So let's go through each one in a little bit of detail. I'm running out of time. Okay, so cheaper L1 costs, right? So EAP 4844 was relatively straightforward. You just have this sort of temporary data that's being posted to L1, and it makes it cheaper for L2s to post data to the L1. And then we're seeing proposals like PeerDAS. I don't really know what it is, but I hear it's going to reduce costs significantly. But it uses some pretty significant sampling, or it's pretty high-tech sampling procedures. You can check out Vitalik's recent blog post for more information. Zika Proof is becoming more efficient. This is a bet. I can't speak from personal experience with Zika Proofs. I don't have any. But again, we're constantly seeing cheaper proof generation and cheaper proof verification. We're also seeing increasingly bad naming terminology, but again, it looks like they're getting better. So the worse the names get, the better we're going to see these proofs becoming. And we're seeing also more and more investment, more and more teams deploying people to ZK. So I expect this to continue. A marker that I saw this morning, but again, it's been taken down. No one's trading on this thing. So the prover and builder market maturing. I mentioned this already. So Uncle Ben mentions that with great competition comes efficient pricing and innovation. And again, that's just what we're seeing on L1, and we expect that to see that in L2 as well. So proof of competition, user and sequencers have to pay less fees. And builder competition, we're going to get better UX through more efficient block building, and sequencers are going to get higher fees. And then shared everything, right? So with shared sequencing comes more MBV, more users, and we're going to get higher fees. We're going to be able to charge higher fees, right? So this is, again, increasing the income of the providers in our system. Shared blobs. So right now, Tyco is creating their own blobs. If you can share your blobs, you can get approximately 100% blob utilization. So you're no longer paying a fixed cost, but you're now getting 100% utilization. You're able to claw back some of the costs that you're paying. Shared proving, we're going to get economies of scale and cheaper L1 verification. So again, these are all sort of things that you're trying to do as a provider to increase your bottom line, or to improve your bottom line. And composability. So less risk and complexity for proposers. You no longer have to use someone like Across. You can just basically sign a transaction that interacts with a shared smart contract. And pre-comps, that's a big area of efficiency and reduce the cost that we expect to see, and improved UX that will definitely improve the revenue model for base rollups. But it's also going to increase expenses, right? So we're going to get there's definitely a greater cost for sequencing two rollups together than sequencing them both of them independently, just because of the increased search space, the greater amount of MEV opportunities that exist. Shared proving, again, similar concept. As far as I understand, if proving two states together is more expensive than proving two individually. But the big question will be, are some of the benefits greater than the increase in proving costs? We're only going to see that when we see what the results of this R&D are. But we definitely are optimistic that we can get these ZK proving costs low and the utility from the shared sequencing high. And centralization, I guess that's sort of a tougher one to quantify, but it's definitely a significant risk. And risks are costs in our revenue model. So centralization poses a risk, and we need to be conscious that all of these shared things will add to centralization risks. So conclusion, when you're thinking about the revenue model for your base rollup, you want to basically tot up all of your incomes, take away all of your expenditures, and ask yourself, why am I playing this if I'm losing, and how can I play more of this if I'm winning? Base Heroes Assemble, so again, do your own calculations, and innovate on increasing income and reducing expenses. So remember Heraclitus Drake. You can't step into the same base revenue model twice, so we want to see less trickles and more waves crashing, all right? So thanks very much, and appreciate your time.
All right, great talk, Connor. I'm just going to direct you to stand over here for the QA. Yeah, this one will be good. All right, so we do have a few questions. Let's go from the most voted question. How can we reconcile revenue models with the decentralization of ZKP rollups where multiple sequencers and validators will need to be compensated?
Did the person that wrote this question, could they explain what they mean by reconciliate? Yeah. Can we get a mic to that person? Or? Okay. Maybe we can go to the next question while we're waiting. Well, maybe I can touch on my interpretation of the question. So maybe when, in the case of current rollups where we have a centralized sequencer and a centralized prover, it's still not clear if the incomes are greater than the expenditures. Okay, but yeah, we have the mic now. Let's go.
Essentially, how do we, as there's a risk of fees increasing with higher number of validators in L2 ZK rollups, what are the risks of that making the situation like more unsustainable, and what are ways in which we can address that?
Well, the good thing about base rollups specifically is that we don't have any validators to pay, right? It's just the L1 proposer. Now, in terms of the multiple provers that may exist, we're basically going to be creating a market, right? And it's a bit like Bitcoin and some of the old arguments for Bitcoin where you're like, okay, well, I have my hash rate and I have the expected Bitcoin rewards. And if I'm losing money there, I can go to Bitcoin Cash or I can go to an alternative blockchain. The same applies to any of these prover markets. So if it becomes too expensive, users will stop paying for it. And basically, you're going to have to spread out your costs or just wait until things become cheap again. So it's definitely a risk. And in a fully decentralized system, yes, we're going to be exposed to these things being too expensive. So the only thing we can do is try and make sure that we have fallbacks, like maybe cheaper fallbacks in the case that those things, we are very exposed to fluctuations. But I think pre-confirmations and things like this that allow us to wait maybe 16 blocks or 32 blocks, L1 blocks, where we get to sort of pick and choose where we include things and maybe pick and choose which provers to pay, that can maybe help to reduce the risk to maybe spikes, let's say. But I'm not sure if that answered your question, sorry.
Great. We do have around 2 minutes for another question. Which one would you like to take, Connor?
I'll go for the shorter one first. If base rollup has a sustainable and positive revenue, can it become a de facto design for the layer one? I guess so, right? Like at some point, if there is one base rollup that is taking up all of the L1 block space, isn't that a theoretical possibility with base rollups that all the computation is being done off chain on the base rollup? So in that sense, it could be doing all of the execution for the L1, but I'm not sure if it can actually replace the L1 because it is still being sequenced by the L1.
All right. Do you want to answer another
one? I'll go for the short one. What is the plan to increase the income, but with the scale and expenditure, with scale the expenditure also increases? That is a tricky one. So it's like again, we have to take a bet, right? And we're looking in the fact that a lot of people like Flashbots, like all of the ZK teams that I mentioned, they're plowing ahead with improved mechanism design or improved proving systems, improved mechanism design, regardless of, let's say, like any specific end game that may be likely. They're trying to make things cheaper. And if things do become incredibly expensive with scale, we can always scale back, right? There will definitely be a limit to the amount of things that we can merge, the amount of state that we can merge. But right now, we can see that single rollups can survive. And then it's just the case of how can we actually just scale up that the merging of all this state? And that's definitely going to be a really interesting question. But we can always scale back. That's the key.
All right, cool. So we're right on time. Thank you so much, Connor.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.